The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Old Dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today is Ask Bill Day, and this is where those of you out there that are interested can submit questions that I'll try to address on the air. But before we get started, I wanted to just say, hey, I hope you had a great holiday and a great New Year's. Also, I hope you had a chance, if you've been listening to the last two Fun Fact Fridays, I hope you had a chance to put together your strategic plans. Now, I know that this is something that takes some time, but it is so much more valuable to have a plan when you're moving forward trying to obtain a goal. I don't know about you guys, but I am totally stoked about 2018. I think it's going to be a great year. There are all kinds of wonderful economic indicators to suggest that it's going to be great, especially for real estate investors, tax incentives, all kinds of things that should benefit you. And also just the market outlook for rentals, especially in the multifamily sphere, are just amazing right now. Just one final word, if you would like one of your questions answered on Ask Bill, just go to our website, olddogsreinetwork.com, look for the contact section, and write your question there and send it on in. Hopefully it'll get selected. Well, let's start with question number one. This one is from Amit. He says, I have around $70,000 in cash to invest, and I'm trying to find my first investment. I feel that a single-family home would be good, but you seem to suggest multifamily in your podcast. Long-term vision is for $3,000 to $4,000 in passive income. I can't tell on your shows how you feel about turnkey properties. They seem to solve a lot of issues in that I don't have the time to fix properties up or the time to go hunting due to my regular job and career. Curious if for someone my age, if you would recommend that or finding traditional properties through an agent. Thanks and keep up the good work, Amit. Well, Amit, thank you for writing and thanks for listening to our podcast. It's a good question. My official position on turnkeys is as follows. I recommend not to buy turnkey properties. However, I will qualify that by saying I also understand that if a turnkey property, you know, or a turnkey company did all that they promised they would provide, then I think it would be a great investment, except maybe for the, you know, the equity issue. And I'll talk about that in just a second. Now, keep in mind, my first four properties were all turnkeys. So I definitely know turnkeys. There are some true advantages. What I was going to do is just pinpoint some of the disadvantages that I know about. I could list the advantages as well, but with our limited time, just some of my concerns on turnkey. The first part is that when you buy a turnkey property, it's usually at or above local market value. Now, because the turnkey provider has done all the upgrades and found you a tenant, they really make their money when they sell you that property, just like a fix and flipper. I usually like to invest in any rental property where I can make money when I buy the property. So I always look for properties that are 10 to 30% below market. Now, you're not likely to find this with a turnkey generally. Number two, they provide maybe not the best property management. This has been my experience and has been the experience of many others I have known. But I think it's also the just property management in itself is probably 95 to 99% of the firms are not that great. Therefore, it's no surprise that turnkey property managers are any different. Plus, some turnkey providers have their own property management departments or business, but most usually contract with local property managers just so they can say they are turnkey. But in reality, they're not actively working with your property manager on your behalf after the purchase. They are generally done after the escrow papers are signed, and then you're on your own with the PM. It's no longer really their problem at that point. Number three, they want cash-only transactions. As I mentioned, some turnkey providers are only cash purchases, but they're basically flippers, so they deal in volume and they want fast transactions. If you prefer to finance your property, most turnkey providers don't want to mess with that transaction. They don't want to deal with banks, inspections, or anything that will slow the transaction. Number four, they don't always pick the best properties in great markets and neighborhoods. Now, when most people buy from turnkey providers, they assume that the property they're buying is in a good neighborhood and that their property will appreciate well over time. Some will sell you properties in good neighborhoods, but unfortunately, that is not always the case. The turnkey provider makes their money on the spread. So they look for cheaper houses that they can mark up. The bigger the spread, the bigger the profit. And it's hard to find those kinds of profits and spreads in the best neighborhoods. I would encourage you to maybe think outside the box before investing your $70K. Now, besides doing what most new investors might do when they first start out investing in an inexpensive single-family home and renting it out, consider the following. What's most important to you? Do you know your why? And what are your goals for even buying the property? Is it cash flow, tax savings to fund a kid's college, leave a legacy to your children? Why are you buying in the first place? That's really important before you can answer those questions. So I would recommend listening to my podcast number 090 and entitled, okay, this is a different approach. If I had $100,000 to invest in real estate, now, I know the example is different, 70K versus, you know, 100K, but the concept is the same. In that podcast, I look at the options of buying one house for $100,000 cash, a single family home, or five single family homes with financing, let's say with a down payment on that purchase, or buying a 15-unit apartment building using the 100K for a down payment. When you see what the options are, now this, my approach is I'm looking at cash flow. So for me, I approached it from that standpoint, and you may be surprised on the results, but I would definitely listen to that. Also, if you're interested in just getting a good fixed return on your investment, now if you're too busy to necessarily, you know, find properties and do the rehab and do those kind of things, you might not even want the headaches of managing or running a rental property. So you might consider something like being a passive investor with somebody else's property. Maybe, you know, someone, of course, that you would trust, and or maybe an apartment syndication. Now, most syndications are paying anywhere 7 to 9% annually, so you earn good money on your investment. And then in 3 to 5 years, generally speaking, when they sell the property, you get a cut of the equity, and sometimes you can double your investment. In addition, as an investor in an apartment deal, you'll learn the inside of how apartment investing works, the sort of behind-the-scenes management aspects, and so forth as an investor. And that experience will count really towards experience when and if you decide to buy your own apartment. So those are a few different things to consider. If you still want to buy, you can buy, and you can certainly buy turnkey if you want. But be cautious. Look at it like any other purchase. I would recommend you have a full inspection of the property before you buy it. Treat it like any other property that you would buy to make sure that it's all that it's supposed to be. Okay, let's go on to question number two. This one is from Rhea. I've been following your blog for a while, but I haven't been able to find an answer to my specific question. Is it possible to buy a house with the intention to rent it out when you don't have a job? I have about $50,000 saved up, but I quit my job so I don't have steady income. How do I start? I rented out my apartment, still has a mortgage, that is giving me a cash flow, and I'm living with relatives now, so I'm not paying rent. I want to become an investor. However, everywhere I look, I need to have a job to be qualified for a mortgage to buy anything. How does it work in your retirement? I would really appreciate your advice on this. Well, Rhea, thank you very much for your kind words and also for your question and for listening to our podcast. First off, if the $50,000 is all you have and you don't have a job, I don't think I would spend it until you do have a job. Also, if you have no emergency reserve fund, and probably referencing here Dave Ramsey, who really recommends 3 to 6 months of survival money, I would also wait. When you get a job, then you can consider investing. When you invest, you don't have to access those funds until, let's say you bought it for cash, then you could always do a cash out refi, for example, if you wanted to access those funds. But once it's invested, you know, it's invested, and you're not really going to have those funds available should you have an emergency or some other reason. Now, your question was, is it possible to buy a house if you don't have a job, a rental house? The simple answer is yes. You can pay cash for the full price of the house, and you do not have to qualify for a loan. But my next question is this: where do you live? And if you don't live in an area where houses sell for $50,000, then are you willing to buy out of state? Now, I was fortunate enough to purchase a duplex out of state in Indianapolis that I paid only around $50,000 for. And I was able to rent out both sides for $650 each, which brought me a gross rental income of $1,300 per month. Now, that was very fortunate. That property has also appreciated significantly since I bought it. But it is possible, but it's not always going to be that lucrative. And you have to look to find those properties. Now, if you want to buy something near you and there are no houses for $50,000, then you have no other choice but to go out of state. There are still a number of other options. And if you do, look in your area, you could find a property where you could get the seller of the house to carry back a loan for the difference. This way, you don't have to qualify and you can refinance the loan at a later time, maybe when you're a little bit more financially stable. I talk a lot about no money down in my blogs and podcasts. There's also a great book by Bigger Pockets, Brandon Turner, called Investing in Real Estate with Little or No Money Down. He was also interviewed on our show in episode 021, and you might want to listen to that. It's on buying properties with little or no money down. You could also get someone to co-sign or sponsor the loan for you, and then maybe you might, instead of using the full 50, maybe you'll just use $10,000 down as a down payment to buy the home. If the person has strong credit and net worth, they could help you get a loan. And there's also hard money, which sometimes is a little easier to qualify for, but you pay for it, that with higher interest rates and points and so forth. This could be a good short-term solution until you get a job. Or build up your income, then you could also refi it and get a more conventional loan. I hope that at least, that gives you some ideas to consider. You also asked how bank loans work when you're in retirement. Well, banks prefer W-2 employees, and they always have. If you don't have W-2 income, they look at your other income, Social Security, pension, rental property income, any other 1099 income. If they see you have a good credit score and steady money coming in that can help, it doesn't guarantee you'll get the good loans, but you can still get financing. As you get into larger commercial properties, 5 units or more, they look less at your financial situation and more at the profitability of the property. This is another reason why I prefer multifamily. Well, I hope that answers your question. Let's go on to question number 3, and this one is from Melissa. Hey, Bill, I'm not an old dog. I'm 35, but still love your show. And we own 12 units, are in contract on 26 more in the Midwest. I was interested in converting one of the units in the 26th unit. It's located close to downtown and stuff, to Airbnb. And I was wondering if you'd recommend that route. I know that you did this on your 22 unit. Just curious about your experience and haven't heard about it in a while. I listened to your update a while back. Well, Melissa, thanks for writing and for your kind words about the podcast. It's okay if you're only 35. We'll let you listen to the show. The way you're moving into real estate, however, you'll probably have a lot of good things to teach us old dogs. I think converting one of your 26 units to an Airbnb could possibly be a great idea. Being close to downtown especially could make it a strong alternative to hotels, and that's a key benefit of Airbnbs. Have you checked airdna.com? They can give you some info on the market for Airbnb in the area. Also, look in Airbnb, just call up similar type of properties and see what they offer. What are their rates, amenities, etc.? If the numbers work, then I would say it could be a good deal. Now, regarding my Airbnb in my 22 unit, it actually worked out quite well. And I've had my issues starting out of the chute, but overall, it has been a big bonus. And in the 5 months that I've had the unit, I generated almost double what I would have for the same unit on a lease. So I'm looking to actually add a second unit, hopefully during 2018. Now, having an Airbnb in an apartment building is a different scenario than renting out an extra room or a garage or a teepee in your backyard or whatever it may be. There are some unique challenges and definitely some advantages. Here are a few things to consider. Keep in mind you'll need to completely furnish and decorate the unit, provide artwork, other touches, and things to make it look nice. That can be a significant investment. If you want to be competitive, you also need to add things like cable, internet access, HDTV. Just look at what your competition is providing. You also need to supply things like towel sheets, pillows, appliances, kitchenware, dishes, glasses, silverware, etc. There's also the issue of the contact person who meets them and gets them oriented and is available for any issues with the unit during their stay. Will you be that person or will you hire someone? That's a key role. You'll also need housekeeping to wash sheets, towels, etc. between guests and doing the turnarounds. Now, on this, I only rent my unit out for a 30-day minimum, so it really restricts who's going to come and stay at my unit, but I haven't had trouble keeping it filled on a regular basis. But that way, I only have one turnaround a month, and it's a lot easier to find somebody to go in and do that kind of clean up and turn around. Sure, your daily rates are, you're going to get higher returns, but I think overall it works out for me because it reduces, the labor, the constant labor of turnarounds every couple of days or every week, laundry and other related costs. Finally, there's the issue of all different kinds of people whom you can't vet as well walking in and out of your building on a regular basis. Now, you have to be comfortable with this. You can screen Airbnb guests, on a limited basis, and you can look at their guest reviews. You can make sure they have ID and things of that nature, but you can't screen them as you can with a tenant. So you just have to be aware of that. And that, again, that's why maybe once a month I feel better somebody coming in, or somebody rents it for 3 months, it's the same person. Hopefully they're of high character and so forth. Now, if all of that seems okay to you, I'd say give it a shot. Let's try and get on our question four here. This will be the most we've done in our Ask Bill segments, but let's give it a shot. Okay, and this one's from Frida. I'm starting to invest after I lost several fourplexes in Kentucky and almost lost my house. I reside in Northern California, just about half an hour to San Francisco. I'm interested in investing in Indianapolis, Indiana, and Atlanta, Georgia. I had problems with management and I'm fearing out-of-state investing. I looked at several properties here in California, which were about a couple hours drive, but after running the numbers, the returns are pathetic, and that's why out-of-state seems to attract me because properties are cheap and easy to cash flow if I have the right team. Do you have any recommendations? Thank you. P.S. I enjoy your podcast. Just threw that in there. She said that, not me. Okay. Well, thank you for listening, Frida. I can definitely relate to your dilemma. I also live in California, and because of the poor returns here, I've had to invest out of state. I'm also familiar with both Indianapolis and Atlanta, where I have properties, and the challenge of finding good property managers. Now, if you had problems before, I'd be cautious before venturing into out-of-state investing. If you invested out-of-state before, then you really need to look at what were the problems and make sure that you could resolve those as best as possible before I'd consider doing it again. You definitely have to have the stomach for out-of-state investing because, yes, it can be lucrative, but at the same time, it's not without its challenges. There's no easy solution, but if you do your due diligence and you can create a steady cash flow from out-of-state rentals, you'll be really happy with the returns. But you're right, you know, building a good team is absolutely essential to successful out-of-state investing, especially a property manager. Before you build your team, though, you need to be clear on your goals. Again, as an earlier question, why are you buying rental property in the first place? How much do you need to generate monthly? How much do you have to invest? How will you achieve your goals and over what period of time? You must be crystal clear in those areas before you even purchase a property, because your goals determine what types of properties you need to buy, where you need to buy them, at what price, and to generate what cash flow. Setting up your team, your property manager is the most important person on the ground. If this person or their organization is weak, your entire operation will suffer. I know from firsthand experience here. So I would recommend, and I'm going to give you a little list of key podcasts that, and I give these as references because I think if you listen to these, you'll gain a lot of depth of experience. You'll also hear some of my struggles and things that I had to deal with and how I overcame them. So I hope this will be helpful for you. Some of them that you might want to reference. The first I mentioned, to know your why. Why are you doing this? And you need to be really clear on that and your goals first. And so we have episode 122 is the importance of knowing your why. Episode 020, building a great out-of-state team. And 066, the pros and cons of investing out-of-state. 068, 7 tips for successful out-of-state investing. 074, hiring the right property manager. 085, finding the best property manager. 089, how to get good quality boots on the ground. And there's also a blog article called 10 Best Questions to Ask Prospective Property Management Firms. I know that seems like a long laundry list of podcasts and articles to review, but they should help give you some background that I think will be helpful for you in making that decision. Also, we have a great list of books in our resource section, which are my top 20 real estate investing books that can also provide good background on how to go into and really buy right for your real estate investments. Well, that is it for today, gang. We got through all 4 questions. I don't know if I'll do that again, but anyway, I hope that the information was helpful for you. Just keep in mind, all you old dog listeners out there in Old Dog Nation, or whatever name we might come up with this group here, somebody actually came up with a name. They said we should be called the Dog Pound, but I'm still thinking about that one. Okay. So anyway, everything presented here today can be accessed in our show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog, and look for the Ask Bill segment. So until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Thanks again for listening, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.